Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. We have another exciting show today, talking to Dr. Brian Reese, who's a medical doctor. He was in the Army for 37 years, a retired full colonel. He went to Iraq and Afghanistan, 5 different tours. So, Brian, I am so glad you're with us today. And is there something else you'd like to tell us about yourself and why you're on the show today?
Well, I think primarily my interest and experiences with post-traumatic stress, exposure to the circumstances that tend to give rise to it in our young service personnel.
Okay. And I imagine you saw quite a bit of that when you were...
Yes, that was the kind of the eye-opening experience. Of course, over the years, I'd worked in clinics in the Army and in the VA and so forth, and so I'd seen plenty of veterans and active duty personnel with post-traumatic stress. But I remember particularly a few instances in Iraq, more so than Afghanistan, I think, where we would see Marines or soldiers fresh from a contact just some few minutes earlier right outside our wall, because we were in Abu Ghraib and the town was not a hospitable place, so there was contact going on just a few hundred yards away. So they'd come into our emergency room, and you could see the birth of a case right there. You could see this 19, 20-year-old guy who had just had to shoot up a vehicle, which turned out to be full of civilians who weren't good drivers. You could see the emotional numbing and just anticipate that probably years to come he's going to be wrestling with the symptoms of post-traumatic stress.
So you saw somebody who moved quickly from adjusting to a situation, essentially, adjustment disorder, to acute stress disorder popping in quickly, and you could see the PTSD that was going to happen.
You know, you really could. Of course, I didn't follow that particular Marine, and I didn't know him well before that particular event, and he had been there for some weeks or months already prior, so... hard to say exactly what was going to happen to him, but that sure is what it looked like.
Yeah, I mean, from my working with veterans, what I find repeatedly is that there's a lot of precursors as well. We talk about people being resilience factors, and I know there's resilience training in the military as well, but I think it kind of misses the point on some of this in terms of working with PTSD. And resilience is kind of like, I describe it, if there was a fire in this room and I'm afraid of fire, I would freak out and go, oh my God, there's a fire, what do I do, and run out. But if I was a fireman and I had been trained and my instincts were to know what to do, I would know, oh, put water here, put foam here, do this, do that. And what I find with veterans is that they might have been trained how to deal with a bullet whizzing past their head, but they haven't been trained how to deal with the fight or flight mode that kicks into high gear and how to shut it down afterwards. So they might have this notion of, oh my God, there's a bullet whizzing past my head, but I'm trained to deal with this, so I'm resilient to dealing with that part of things, but I'm not resilient to what happens afterwards, or what happens when my buddy is shot and I don't know what to do then, because I'm powerless to do something to help my buddy.
Right, exactly. I think that's an area where we medical types in that environment have an advantage, because we do have something, we have a skill set that we are obliged to execute immediately with these casualties, whereas a combat infantryman really doesn't. I mean, he has some minimal first responder capabilities, but otherwise really can't deal with that. And you really can't mimic in training the the horror of shooting not just an enemy, but in, you know, there are civilians on the battlefield, and they're little kids, and they're women, and it can become awful in a hurry.
Well, again, you're powerless. You're trying to do people. I don't believe most people have bad intentions. Soldiers are trying to do the right thing. They're trying to help people.
Right. That is the idea. They're trying to protect. That's the mindset that they joined the service with.
Absolutely. And just like there's sometimes some police that are not good, most police are very good, and they're trying to do the right thing and protect and help people. And certainly soldiers are trying to do that, but they're in a situation where they might end up, like you said, somebody's just a bad driver, and they don't know if it's a bad driver or if it's somebody with an IED about to blow them up.
Exactly.
And so they end up shooting the wrong person. And then it's like, psychologically, how do you deal with that part of thing? How do you deal with that unexpected that you're not trained for, that you don't know what to do with? That's where I think the real trauma starts coming in.
Right, and they're, you know, the adaptive mode that they get into. I mean, back from my peers in the Vietnam era, the mantra was drive on, don't mean nothing. That was That's what they would say to themselves. You know, somebody they would have taken out a civilian by mistake, or one of their friends had fallen, and the idea is just drive on, don't mean nothing. You just leave it behind and move on, as if you really could just leave it behind.
And of course you can't. Numbing is the worst thing that you could do. Suppressing. I tell people, clients, that, you know, it's like taking that beach ball and shoving it underwater. What's going to happen? Right? It's going to pop up. Well, what if you shove it down even harder? It's going to pop up even harder. And suppressing and numbing is absolutely the worst thing that you can do.
And that is, you know, just culturally, I mean, both functionally to move on, and because the job at the moment is to accomplish the mission. And so you leave behind, I mean, explicitly, if a vehicle gets hit, then you drive past that vehicle to get out of the kill zone where they were, where they got hit. Or if somebody falls, you have to move on to get the bad guys and then deal with your wounded later.
Yeah.
So there's that imperative, and then there's also this... you know, just the emotional mindset that you just don't want to deal with this horrific thing that just happened. You're going to leave that behind and move on.
Yeah. And of course, you can't do that. You know, I mean, you have to be able to do it to survive that moment. And I see that with all of us day to day, that sometimes we have to be able to put things aside. I see that, for instance, when somebody loses... through the death of a spouse or partner or loved one or parent, they buck up and, so to speak, stiff upper lip, hold it together for the family, for the friends, for the family, whoever it is, and they stay strong and they sort of push everything aside, and then afterwards you all fall apart.
Right. Yeah.
And so the question is, what can we do to help people in these kind of situations, in the military or not in the military? What can we do to make a difference?
Right, and in the military, there are kind of two modes that both the Department of Defense and Veterans Administration have adopted. One is this comprehensive soldier and family fitness program, or resilience training, which has some value, and but I think it's fairly limited. I think there's a fairly limited subpopulation that these little vignettes and training that we get in the Army, a small population that's going to be helped significantly by them. And so the resilience training is fairly vestigial, I think. And then the other, of course, is addressing post-traumatic stress after it's been established. And we try to do that kind of subacutely right there on the battlefield. There are combat stress teams that go around and interview soldiers and talk to them after events and so forth if their commander kind of invites them in and thinks they have a place. And then there are all of the things that the VA and DOD, the medical model where we treat with medications or with cognitive behavioral therapy or any number of things. So my interest was in eyes closed meditative techniques, what they might have to offer.
Mm.
My own experience was with TM, Transcendental Meditation, and I thought that probably would have some value because I'd see this acute stress reaction being the this fight or flight being the polar opposite of the restful alertness, the stay in play psychophysiologic changes that happen during TM and that persist after TM.
Mm.
I thought that there may well be a nexus there. So I did a couple of things. I invited myself into the Pentagon and the comprehensive soldier fitness activity there for a few weeks and ended up writing a paper about the use of meditative techniques for promotion of resilience, a review paper. And then subsequent to that, colleagues and I did some original research with regard to Congolese refugees in Uganda who were suffering from post-traumatic stress. And we randomized them to learn TM or to be in a weightless control and got some really incredible results.
Really? By the way, you are listening to KRUU FM 100.1 on your FM dial, on the internet everywhere in this entire world. And maybe worlds beyond. And we are archived all these shows, so you could listen at some other point. If you want to contact us, feel free to get a hold of us at any time. My email, or you, the email here is KRUUFM, is mentalhealthmatters@KRUUFM.com. If you need me specifically, you could always email me, Scott, S-C-O-T-T, at ardentcenter.com. Ardent is A-R-D-E-N-T, Scott at ardentcenter.com. And if you want to get a hold some a bit more about what's going on in this wonderful African relief, you could contact them at contact@africanptsdrelief.org or simply go to their website, which has wonderful, really surprisingly detailed, wonderful information about PTSD in Africa, but also how it could be related to a number of different areas. Brian, and we are talking today to Brian Reese, medical doctor, retired colonel, 37 years, 5 tours in Afghanistan and Iraq. Pretty hardcore guy who's done an amazing amount of things. And Brian, you were talking to us about why your results that you found from this Congolese study and your experiences in going up the chain of command to the Pentagon, and I'm actually really curious, how was it received at the Pentagon, and how was your studies received about what you did with the Congolese and refugees in Africa?
Well, very good questions. On the one hand, they were received very amiably. I think the Army does not have, it was not antagonistic toward meditation. I think don't particularly fully appreciate that there are differences among different meditative techniques, and that they have different different procedures, and not surprisingly, they would have different outcomes. But that's what the data tends to show. So it takes some degree of sophistication that a lot of folks aren't quite there yet. So on the one hand, they're open to it. On the other hand, I haven't really seen. Haven't seen it gain traction enough that there has been funding forthcoming, which is, that's kind of where the rubber meets the road, is how do you make this available to veterans and to soldiers. and what I'd like to see in terms of making it available to soldiers in training, having it be in the menu of options that would be funded by the Army or the Marine Corps in terms of the entry-level training that all personnel would get. It wouldn't be something mandatory, I wouldn't think, but it should be something that is available. So I haven't seen that yet. I kind of would like to see that going forward. And then as far as our results with the Congolese refugees, it's, you know, it was published in a peer-reviewed journal, and you know, when I've presented it to people, they're very impressed, but, you know, nobody has peer-reviewed journals on their coffee table and then sit around and read them for fun. So I think it's a fairly small subset of people who really keep track of these things. And there are other interests and politics and so forth that you have to overcome in large organizations in order to get some innovative technique introduced.
Well, by the way, the website was www.ptsdreliefnow.org. That's www.ptsdreliefnow.org. And that's dealing with African PTSD. So what you're saying is essentially some mixed results here. What else?
Maybe.
Well, you know, it sounds like you had good results, but mixed aftercare of like somebody actually picking up the ball and saying, this is amazing, let's do something.
Right. And they're, I mean, that's exactly it. You know, our results, I don't, you know, of course, there's a legitimate concern. Would our results, can you generalize from this population of Congolese refugees to American service personnel? There have been studies that have been done in American service personnel which show some good results, so I think it that you can generalize. I don't think the results necessarily will be as spectacular as they were in our group, because our group was was treatment naive. They had had absolutely nothing before, and they had these just really over the top. I mean, they all got better. They all got significantly better.
Hmm.
They got better real fast. It was
and all they did was meditate. Nothing else.
Exactly. That's it.
Why do you think that's so powerful? I mean, I keep rattling my head as a therapist. You know, I get that it probably turns off that fight or flight mechanism, right, that we started the show today talking about. But it seems staggeringly powerful in terms of the results. And it's like all they're doing is meditating.
Right. You know, I think there are two things that come to mind. One is, you know, what we think is going on with the brain when one is exposed to this overwhelming stressor that gives rise to post-traumatic stress, where your the parts of the brain, the amygdala and so forth, that are geared toward perceiving threats in the environment, that we all turn on and turn off if we see a rabid dog running at us or whatever the case may be. We turn it on and we become kind of agitated and fearful and so forth. And then after the threat has passed, it goes off and that's it. In these folks with post-traumatic stress, the thinking is that these parts of the brain, I mean, they light up and they don't turn off. And so that's why this hypervigilance and so forth can go on for years and decades, where guys that were in Vietnam still, they lock all their doors and they patrol around the house and they're looking for enemies and so forth, 45 years later. So when someone practices TM, the brain changes, and those parts of the brain that have been activated for so long, they finally get a break. They get a rest. They get to turn off. And then we also see this other, just a very significant finding. The thing that veterans complain most bitterly to me when I was working at the VA, the guys with post-traumatic stress, is just they never got restful sleep. They would go to bed. It was just torture. They would, turn and toss.
Mm.
And so
yeah, I've seen that a lot.
And awaken. It's something that is the most irritating, I think. And there's one great, I think it's on that website, on the David Lynch Foundation website as well, there's a link to a lady who was one of the control subjects who, after she learned TM in Uganda, the thing that she was most enthusiastic about, and this was just a week later, was the quality of her sleep. And you can see it in the video. It's just 3 minutes long. She goes from talking about all these symptoms that she has, and she learns TM, and then she's interviewed again. And she is so enthusiastic about her sleep. So to have these veterans and these folks who are suffering from post-traumatic stress just get a night's sleep. I mean, they give away the keys to the car and their mortgage just to get a night's sleep. And here with TM, we find that sleep is improved in these folks.
Well, by the way, you're listening to KRUU FM 100.1, the greatest radio station on the planet. How's that? You're listening to Mental Health Matters. Today, we're talking to Dr. Brian Rees, in the military for 37 years. And we are talking about PTSD in Africa as well as here and around the world. And I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I certainly see it with almost every condition I treat. So I'm a marriage and family therapist, educational psychologist, counselor, supervisor, trainer, professor. I run the Arden Counseling Center, Arden Community Wellness Center, the Fairfield Mental Health Alliance, and a whole host of other things. And one of the most disturbing things I find is that people don't get deep rest. And they mix it up. They mix up their circadian rhythm, so they're going to bed too late and getting up too late. They're not sleeping deeply, so they're not having quality of sleep. They're not having good timing of sleep. They're not having good depth of sleep, as well as, obviously, the length of sleep, which pretty much becomes, for everybody, 7.5 to 9 hours. If you're sleeping too much, there's something going on, and if you're sleeping too little, it will cause brain issues, not just a little, you know, fogginess and you need a little caffeine. It will actually cause brain issues. And so part of the problem that you certainly see with everybody with PTSD is that if you think about it, you're having that hypervigilance. You're always on alert. How do you actually get any depth of sleep? How do you let go enough to get sleep? And just the simple mechanism of being able to get that state of mind so that the brain can rejuvenate. If you don't sleep, the side effects are catastrophic. If your sleep studies, there's many sleep studies, and if you're woken up every time you're about to dream, and so you don't dream for a couple of days, you start going psychotic. You know, and so it's staggering how much is going on and how essential it is to get sleep.
Yeah, it's amazing that something that we tend to disregard, look at it as just being kind of a waste of time, some dead time that you have to spend before doing the things that you find rewarding, but how essential that is, how essential it is to have that rest and that cycle and balance of rest and activity. Fortunately, the culture, at least in the military, is such that that is recognized, and there are, one of the things that the commander is supposed to be attentive of at all times is sleep discipline, so that he has, you know, that his soldiers, of course, the officers kind of don't do it, they disregard it and, you know, work all day and all night.
Yeah.
But their enlisted folks, they have to structure time for them to get sleep and make sure that that somebody is always, you know, that they're getting their sleep.
That's great.
And yet if you have a soldier who can't sleep because he's in this environment and he's stressed and he's hypervigilant and he's having these intrusive thoughts and disturbing dreams and so on and so forth, then just telling him, you know, go get some sleep, go get some rest is not helpful. So having this technique, which, as a matter of fact, I think the first article that was written in a North American newspaper about transcendental meditation was in the San Francisco Chronicle in 1959, and the article, the title of it was "Yogi Brings Cure for Insomnia."
Huh.
So the first thing that was noticed in North America about TM is, and as I understand, I can't remember the tape or where exactly I read it, but Maharishi's comment was, I come to the West to wake people up, and they use my technique to fall asleep. But it just goes to show that in our culture, we disregard sleep, and we don't attend to it enough. And then when we have the opportunity to actually get some good sleep, it's a real novel experience for a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even, you know, it's something that everyone needs to balance. And I think people even who are meditating and are have otherwise good lifestyles, they neglect this notion of sleep hygiene, going to bed at the same time, getting up at the same time, following a healthy circadian rhythm of light and dark, and, you know, not getting lost in electronics and staying up half the night and taking an hour to go to sleep because they, you know, disturbed themselves, you know, watched a horror movie all night and now they can't go to sleep. You know, it's, I think it's something we all need to be vigilant of, but, you know, I think especially for veterans, you know, you're in a strange place with a whole bunch of other people in the same room. And even if you're not being shot at, just your circumstances themselves would make it difficult to get healthy sleep hygiene.
Right. It can be a challenge. Although one good thing is the culture does recognize the value of what they call battle rhythm. Where as soon as you get someplace, you get plugged in to your routine. You have to get exercise. And so there are gymnasia all over the place, even on these forward operating bases.
Wow. There's
going to be some gym where you can go and lift weights or do something.
Mm-hmm.
So exercise, there's always food, and then sleep. They emphasize that you need to get into your rhythm where every day you can kind of count on getting a balance of sleep and activity and good exercise and good food. Of course, a lot of soldiers don't avail themselves of that, but that is explicitly within the military. There's this understanding that you need to have an appropriate daily routine. So adding TM to it, I think, is not that great a cultural leap. It does fit right into that culture, and I am encouraged when I kind of present it in that way. People nod, and they say, yeah, that'll work. I could see soldiers doing that.
Absolutely. So, Brian, we're just about out of time. Time just went so quickly with you. I'd love to have you on again. You were amazing. Is there something else you'd like to say as the last 1 minute to sum it up here?
Well, just that, you know, I do see a future for TM, for post-traumatic stress, both in Africa and in a large way and in our veteran population. I completely forgot to mention, I just finished a book, which is now on Amazon, which is kind of a memoir of all of these experiences in Iraq and Afghanistan through the lens of someone practicing meditation and looking at it in sort of a spiritual way. The name of the book is Detained, since I was dealing with detainees, which is a whole other chapter to get into.
Wow, yeah. Please come back and tell us about that. So, Brian Reese, and the book again is?
Detained.
Detained, and it's on Amazon now.
It is.
Wow. Yeah, I'd love to see that. And if anybody's wanting more information on PTSD in Africa, look at www.ptsdreliefnow.org. If you have any questions, feel free to contact us here at mentalhealthmatters@KRUUFM.com. And Brian, I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
It was a pleasure. Thank you so much. Bye, everyone. See you next week.